Hey, everybody. If you've been looking for love at first sight, it's closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So this June 7th to June 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide. Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more and see full terms and conditions.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. This is the 500-something time that I said that.
Oh, yeah? We're not to the sixes yet, are we?
No, it's going to be a little while.
What are we, mid-fives?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, we hit 500, what, around January, end of January.
It's a lot of knowledge we're doling out for free, folks.
Yeah, we're like, we're in like 520 maybe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought it might be more than that.
You doing okay?
I'm great.
Good.
How are you?
I'm okay. Like, my back hurts a little bit, and Yumi's convinced that it's a kidney infection onset, so she's like, you need to drink a lot of apple cider vinegar and baking soda diluted in water and cranberry juice. That's what I'm doing.
And water.
Yeah, that one too. Yeah. But I've got stuff diluted in water, so that counts.
Yeah.
But it's kind of rough.
You know, I don't know that your coffee counts as water.
No, it does, actually. You know, the whole you should drink eight-ounce glasses of water a day.
You can factor in coffee?
Yeah, and it's totally made up. Like, there's no one's ever said that you really should do that. It just kind of came on as like an early meme, I guess. And there's not any evidence that an adult human living in a temperate climate of average health couldn't survive without any additional water on a daily basis because we get it from things like food and other stuff.
I think the idea is that you benefit from drinking water.
Again, there's not necessarily any scientific evidence that
you benefit
backs that
from
up.
Drinking water.
It's pretty much made up.
I'm not so sure about
I'm
that.
I'm telling you, look
I'll
it up.
Get back to you.
Okay. All right. We'll have a look up off.
Okay.
But that's not what this is about, Chuck, nor is it about my possibly impending kidney infection and hospitalization.
Uh-huh.
It is about the idea that everyone around the world deserves to make a decent, sustainable living wage.
Agreed.
Or should at the very least get should see the fruits of their labor in a fair way.
Yeah.
This kind of flies in the face of something called capitalism, the free market system.
A little bit.
Because in the free market system, one of the big things you have is pretty much every man for himself. Now, everyone in a free market system, a completely theoretical, unfettered free market system, has the opportunity to enjoy the fruit of his or her labors, has the opportunity to make a decent livable wage. But one could also argue that the balance of power has tipped so far in favor of a consolidated, internationally connected view that's just not a real possibility anymore. That theory, that theoretical version, is now an impossibility.
Right. I think, hey, now might be a good time to recommend to people to go listen to our previous podcast, Is the Free Market Really Free?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Wasn't that the name of that one?
Yeah, that was a good one.
That was a good one.
So, because this balance of power has tipped so far, pretty much post World War II is when it happened.
Yeah,
there are some people out there who have come up with the idea that maybe we should go an extra mile and make sure that the people who are actually making all the things we enjoy, for example, coffee,
sure,
wine, soccer balls, people who
bananas,
it's a big one.
Yeah,
people who actually make these things get an income that is like something that anyone who is on the receiving end of these bananas and coffee would recognize as a livable amount of money in return for what they're giving us.
That's right. This is not a call for communism.
No.
This is a call for fair pay via something called fair trade.
Yeah.
And the idea is that you and I and whoever else wants to support this kind of cause might not mind going into their local coffee. And we're going to use coffee a lot because that's one of the big daddies
that's
in fair trade.
Yeah, that's the big daddy, right?
Might not mind going into their coffee shop or their grocery store or wherever you hunt down your coffee and paying a little bit more for your coffee. It's got that fair trade stamp on there, knowing that ultimately the worker who picked those beans is going to be cared for in a, you know, humane, fair way.
It's going to get a decent amount of money for their product.
Exactly.
And you kind of hit something on the head when you said seeing that fair trade label. There's a really big distinction between a product that carries a certified fair trade label.
Yeah.
And something that's marketed as fairly traded. That means nothing. It means absolutely
yeah.
nothing. Like that they might as well say like the contents inside are orange and green maybe.
Yeah, it's the whole misleading labeling of things.
Yeah, which is
just
pretty...
like the organic deal, certified organic versus these, you know, this crap food that will say like contains naturally natural ingredients or things like that.
Yeah.
Emily has to fight this battle all the time with her company because she's one of the people that tries to only use, you know, fair trade ingredients and 100% certified organic. And she gets angry every day when she sees products, body products, that slap something on their label like naturally good. And people think that means it's all natural.
Right.
Or all natural. That doesn't mean that it's 100% organic or all natural. It's
no,
just,
no.
It needs to be regulated more, I think.
And that's such a cynical thing to exploit.
Yeah.
Like something
totally.
That really meant something at one point in time.
I know.
For dollars.
Yeah.
You know, to market something that doesn't mean anything. It's actually not good for you and marketing it as good for you.
Yeah.
While using an already established, consumer trusted label or phrasing.
Yeah.
That's sad.
It's one of the wrong things in the world.
But
let's just say that.
That's why fair trade people, fair trade groups have they jealously guard their labels.
Yeah.
So that when you do see them, you can trust what's going on.
Yeah, and they'll you know, companies that mislabel or mislead with their labels also make their labels look like the other labels even. And the font and the color is just like it's so underhanded.
Yeah.
It's really awful.
So let's talk about the background of this.
All right. It started in the 1950s with something called Alternative Trade Organizations, mm-hmm. ATOs. Not the fraternity, ATOs.
All right.
They were doing beer bongs and, you know, other things. I couldn't say what I was going to say.
I think everybody knows.
They were humanitarian groups that started this, and basically they wanted to alleviate poverty in developing nations by cutting out middlemen between small producers in the north, northern hemisphere, and small businesses in the southern hemisphere.
Right.
Which meant more profits directly going to workers who picked the bean.
Yeah.
Again, with coffee.
And then I guess over time they found that this process could work, but you really do need middlemen, right? So.
Yeah, not always, but depending on where you are in the process, sure.
Right. But if you're using the existing, I guess, trade routes and system of trade that's been established globally in the world. There are middlemen. Like you have a coffee grower in Ethiopia. He can't get that to you, you know, in New England. You do need a middleman. What they figured out with fair trade is that you can certify the people in between to make sure that the money is getting to the producer. And rather than cutting out the middleman to increase the income of the original producer in the developing country, you go to the consumer on the consuming end and say, hey, you mind paying a little more for this? And in return, we will guarantee you that the person who made this coffee that you're enjoying gets that money, that extra money.
Yeah.
Like you are basically essentially sending it to this guy, and we're the ones who are going to make sure that happens. And we're going to do so through this labeling.
That's right. And in 1988 is actually when the labeling itself was born with a Dutch ATO called Solidaridad. Is that not right? Solidaridad.
Did you see we got yet another like email about our pronunciation?
We try, people. That's part of the charm of the show.
Some people don't like it.
I understand that. So Solidaridad from the Dutch region of the world, from Amsterdam, from the Netherlands, from Holland, from all those places.
Yeah.
They said, you know what, we should label these things, help people out when they're shopping, get them into Main Street markets without compromising, you know, the trust that consumer has in these products. And that is basically where fair trade was born. And we do have one stat here in 2001, not super recent, but just to show you in how people pay for coffee. Coffee fluctuates in price. It's like, you know, any commodity.
It's a commodity, yeah.
So in 2001, the price dipped really low, and the coffee growers were receiving only about 45 cents per pound for coffee, but fair trade coffee buyers paid $1.21 per pound that year to ensure that these people, despite the fluctuations, were able to keep the lights on for their business, essentially.
Right. Because every fair trade organization sets a minimum price, a minimum fair price that their producers are going to get. No matter what. No matter what the market does, no matter what. And I believe if the market goes up, they get the higher of the two.
Oh, okay.
But at the very least, they're getting that minimum price for their product.
Hey there, are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals. But you can drink water as clean as nature intended.
Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain, everybody. This rain is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants commonly found in groundwater.
Yep, Richard's Rainwater is naturally pure with no need for harsh chemicals or additives. That means no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing.
And you can enjoy the clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And we even have a special offer, don't we, Josh?
Yeah, text STUFF to 2512928887, and you'll get $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater. Sip the sky. Hey, everybody, we're here to tell you about Viator, a tool that you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world.
That's right. The Viator app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there no matter where you're traveling or what you're interested in.
Yep, Viator can help you plan better travel experiences. 300,000 plus travel experiences to choose from means you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy.
That's right. You can also enjoy real traveler reviews to get insider information from people who've already been on the experience that you're considering. Plus, you get free cancellation that helps you plan for the unexpected.
Yeah, and Viator offers 24/7 customer service, so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. So download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
So what is an FLO? This is sort of how it starts, or how the process itself starts.
Oh, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. The Fair Trade Labeling Organization.
So that's one of them. There's a number of labeling organizations. Like there's Transfair USA, there's a European Fair Trade Association, right?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, I guess the FLO is like the agency that oversees the agencies.
Oh, is that what it is?
That's the impression that I have.
Okay.
But basically, say that you want to, say that you are a coffee roaster. And again, we're going with coffee because that's the big one.
Yeah.
And you say, hey, I really want to get in on this fair trade action for whatever reason. It doesn't matter if you want to increase your own sales or whatever. It doesn't matter. You can exploit this process, right?
Yeah, sure.
No, but that's the thing. Like the coffee roaster can be like, you know, everybody's into this fair trade thing and I think I can sell a lot more if I go through this process. So let me do it.
Right.
And they contact the FLO or a labeling organization. They say, great, we will sell you a license for 10,000 pounds of fair trade coffee beans.
Yeah, so it's a contract for a set amount.
Yes. Now, what they could do is set the coffee roaster up with an already certified fair trade producer and supply chain. Or they can go in and say, we can go ahead and certify your existing supply chain.
Yeah.
and producer. And that's what they do. The coffee roaster pays for that license, sends the FLO out. They go through the supply chain, make sure that all this money is going back to the producer who is expected to get it, right?
Yeah, and they actually send people, human people, visit farms.
Right.
To ensure that all their business practices and their farmers are adhering to these procedures, which
and,
we're going to
talk about.
And
not only that, they also add a dash of, like, sustainability, like, they're not using, like, horrible environmental techniques for this stuff. And, but yes, basically to make sure that this producer isn't just, like, a, you know, dole disguised as, like, some dude.
Right.
You know?
Yeah,
like, they're going and doing some detective work. And once they figure out that everything's legit and it falls into the fair trade standards, which we'll talk about later, then that's certified, the license is exercised, and that 10,000 pounds is delivered, and that guy can put that on that 10,000 pounds.
Yeah, and it's not always just a one-time visit. They can also follow up with periodic inspections to ensure that, you know, that you keep up with that kind of governance and you didn't just, like, pull a fast one on them and, you know, get your house in order for one day, you know, while they came and paid you a visit.
And there's the license is usually, there's a contract involved, like, so the middlemen who are involved have to participate in these standards. And one of the standards is you have to sign, like, at least a 6-month contract usually, which is actually kind of a lot for these producers because a middleman can be like, oh, this guy's selling it for way cheaper. I'm going over to him.
Yeah.
No, this producer's guaranteed 6 months of going to this middleman and getting the money from them.
Well, yeah, and like you said, 6 months doesn't sound like much, but I get the feeling that it was just like it's the Wild West out there.
Yeah.
You know, like you can drop someone from day to day.
Yeah, well, they can be like, well, this guy's selling for a penny less, and you force this guy down, and now this guy's down to 2 cents, so you go to another guy and be like, this guy's down to 2 cents. You can just play as many small farmers as you want against one another and drive prices down as low as you want.
Right.
That fair trade prevents that from happening by forcing middlemen to sign a contract.
Yeah, so that's one of the tenets. Another is direct trade between the producers and buyers. So they try to eliminate the middleman when they can. In Central America, they call the middleman a coyote.
Yeah, they do.
I thought that was interesting. So in order to do this, they encourage these farmers to get together and form co-ops, export co-ops, band together. You know, you've got a little more power. So something that he points out here, too, is that the exporter, if it's a plantation, the fair trade standard requires that national laws governing the minimum wage and regulations governing the conditions be upheld, and the workers' rights are all upheld as well.
Right.
So that's when you're not, I guess, forming a co-op.
No, but fair trade tends to encourage co-ops, democratically run co-ops.
Sure.
But yeah, they're not necessarily completely opposed to the idea of certifying something that's run as a plantation rather than a co-op, as long as the workers are treated well. And one of the other things they do, like if there is if they do run into a plantation system, and the workers are fine, everything's good, they attach what's called a social premium.
Yeah.
So if you are, say there's a chocolate importer called Double Chocolate, D-U-B-B-L-E, I think it's in the UK, and they sell fair trade chocolate. And they, on their site, they were saying that they pay an extra, I think $200 a ton of cocoa, ton of cocoa. And that's just a social premium. That's on top of whatever the market price is or whatever the minimum fair trade price is.
Right.
Whatever's higher. In addition to that, they pay an extra $200 right off the top for a ton of cocoa. And that doesn't necessarily go right back to the producer. It goes back to the producer's community.
Right.
And is used for things like scholarships, water projects, sanitation projects, like schools, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's that social premium is in addition to raising the individual's income. It raises the well-being of the entire community.
Yeah. Well, with the idea too that that's just going to be good for everyone's business ultimately.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. That's where it's kind of, it turns capitalism in on itself. Like the idea that you can democratize through capitalism is a huge, like, neocon idea.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's true. Like it does work. But they're saying, but we need to do that through a certain measure of Marxism.
Right.
It's kind of funny.
Yeah. and the final tenet, which you already sort of mentioned, was the minimum prices for farmers. The idea, what they want here is obviously to make sure that the price that the farmer gets is more than the cost of production. Because, you know, everyone's out to make a dollar here and there.
Right.
And so they actually take a survey, to make sure that the, you know, the price is right on the money. And it covers things like, the cost of living, cost of production, and even the cost of complying with the fair trade standards. So they roll that in there as part of their accounting as well.
Yeah. And we should say also, it is the, to purchase a license for fair trade stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's on the ultimate, I guess, distributor, the coffee roaster in the case of coffee.
Yeah.
Or the chocolate producer in the case of cocoa purchases, whatever. And before, I think until 2004, like it was free if you were the actual person producing like the raw material, the good, like the coffee or the cocoa.
Yeah.
But then the FLO said, you know what? We need to charge you guys a little bit too. So I think that further encourages co-ops because a small
right.
farmer in, you know, Ethiopia can't necessarily afford whatever it costs to be in the system.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
And let's take a second here, Chuck. To remind people exactly what the disparity is between the people who eat the chocolate and the people who produce the cocoa.
Okay.
So say you were living in Timor-Leste in Southeast Africa in 2005.
Uh-huh.
Guess how much your annual income would be expected to be?
Well, what am I doing? Am I growing?
You're just a resident of it.
Okay.
You're doing whatever you want, but you're an average.
I have a pedicab.
Okay. You have a pedicab?
Uh-huh.
Since you live in Timor-Leste, I think I'm saying that right. Lest. One of the two. Man, I hope I'm saying that right. You made $400 in 2005. $400 for the whole year in 2005.
Wow.
In Malawi, you made $596. In Somalia, $600. In Congo, $675.
For a year?
A year.
Wow.
365 days of labor. Or a large portion of 365 days.
I take Christmas off in the pedicab, by the way.
All right, 364 days of labor
yeah.
got you $400 in Timor-Leste. On the high end, in Eritrea, you made a whopping $917. In the United States in 2005, the average U.S. citizen
mm-hmm.
spends $114 a day.
Spends?
Yeah. So that's the concept of fair trade. It's like you have this extra couple of dollars, pay it for this, and we will make sure that that guy in Eritrea
yeah.
gets it. And he's going to benefit, and in fact, the whole world will benefit. Because there's that whole democratic peace theory where, like, supposedly there's a correlation between democratization and a decrease in war.
Yeah.
And belligerence between nations. So, who knows? It could just be beneficial for everybody.
Yeah, and this isn't welfare. This isn't taking from the rich and giving, taxing the rich and giving it to the poor who, you know, can't get off their butts and go work. These are people working very hard
right.
at their job that you are ultimately benefiting from when you take that sip of coffee that you're enjoying. And it's like, we did it in our own country when we started, enacting like saying, hey, kids shouldn't work in factories.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't make 8 cents a week. We did it here in the fair trade label ensures that wherever your product is coming from around the world, that the same thing is going to be, you know, happening.
Yeah, it's intervention and exploitation.
But there are still critics.
Yeah, there are definitely critics and criticisms in with fair trade. And, I mean, they're legitimate, too.
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of criticisms about people saying, hey, you shouldn't do this and take care of workers. There's probably a handful of people out there that think that.
It's more the
But generally, yeah, it's
a criticism of fair trade and the fair trade organizations, not of the people who are actually, you know, producing this stuff.
Yeah, basically saying you're ignoring the basic tenets of supply and demand in a way because you're attaching an inflated price above the market value without doing anything else.
Right, and because it's difficult to kind of get these things to market, more difficult than a regular thing. There's been a real focus on things like coffee
yeah.
or bananas. So in these areas where you can grow coffee and can grow bananas, since fair trade is saying, hey, if you grow this stuff and you do it the way we want you to, you'll get four times what, you know, you're getting paid without us.
Right.
More people are going to flock from cotton to coffee.
Yeah.
And there's going to be an oversupply and that's ultimately going to drive prices down for everybody.
Right. Another criticism is that fair trade generally addresses these co-ops that we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if you were just a single farmer, that's like, I don't want to be in a co-op. But I still want to be fair trade. It's a little more difficult.
Yeah.
And these co-ops, just like anything else, when you get more than two people together in a room, there is a possibility for greed and corruption. So some of these co-ops have been attacked for mismanaging fair trade proceeds. And supporters say, you know what, we can only do what we can. We're trying our best. We're not saying we're going to solve the world's poverty problems.
Right.
But what we are saying is that we can ensure that these farmers and these co-ops and these workers are getting paid a fair wage, enough to live on when you eat your delicious or drink your delicious roasted coffees.
Yeah. And I guess the one that makes the most sense to me is the encouraging oversupply on the market and driving down prices for other people and everybody in general.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and really that could be very easily solved by just focusing on other products as well.
Yeah, right now they say about 800,000 farmers are benefiting from fair trade right now worldwide.
That was that's an 08 stat.
So I bet it's over a million now.
Yeah.
Because it's growing, baby.
Yeah, I mean, that was another thing, too, is the sectors are growing, too. Like in the early 2000s, fair trade coffee grew like 74% within a couple of years.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, it's a good way to go if you're a poverty-stricken coffee farmer.
Yeah, and it depends on where you are, what kind of products are available. It's not like everything you find in your grocery store will have a fair trade option.
Yeah, but it's kind of been presented and marketed in a real, like, laid-back, hippie, granola way. And it's like, hey, we'll put it out there and tell people about it, and if they want it, that's awesome. There's been no, like, if you took the same kind of marketing that's applied to stuff that's not produced fairly and applied it to fairly traded stuff, I'm quite sure you could generate a lot more interest and have people clamoring for, like, I want fairly traded beef or whatever.
Yeah.
People are going to want that stuff. They just don't know that they want it yet necessarily.
That's true.
And I think that the NGOs who are doing fair trade could do more to diversify.
That's excellent.
If I'm wrong, correct me, someone who's in the field.
You got anything else?
No, that's it for fair trade.
Hey, speaking of NGOs, our favorite co-ed, Cooperative for Education.
Yeah.
They are who took us down to Guatemala, and we got to see their handiwork in person, and it is good work.
Yeah, they seek to break the cycle of poverty using education, and
yeah,
they've got a great model. Like you said, we've seen it firsthand. We believe in it. And so we are making a call out here. We're plugging for them because they have they're in need.
Okay.
They are looking to triple the number of students they serve over the next 3 years, so they're going to need the help of some Stuff You Should Know listeners.
All right, so we've got some details for you folks. The who of this, we're talking 54 indigenous Mayan middle school students.
Right.
Right. These students are getting help, literally, like firsthand help.
Yeah, they're getting help through scholarships that cover tuition, school fees, and a youth development program that fosters community service and leadership among the students, right? There are two scholarship levels. There's a diploma sponsor, which is $70 a month.
Yeah.
And there's an honor roll sponsor, which is $35 a month. Those are some cute names.
Okay, that is very cute. So when all this is going down is they want 54 students sponsor by the end of the year, the end of 2013.
Right.
Is there anything greater, Josh, than finding a sponsor for every single student?
No, and we can do it. I mean, we have a lot of listeners, and we have a lot of listeners with big hearts.
Actually, there is one thing greater. They could cover these students and have a waiting list for next year.
Oh, that'd be even better.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is how you do this, guys. You can go to the website, www.cooperativeforeducation.org, and you can sign up to sponsor a child today. You simply click on the Donate Now button in the top right hand of the corner.
That's right. And you know what? A lot of our listeners have gotten involved over the years with co-ed and gotten a lot out of it in return as humans.
Yeah, it's a genuinely great organization that we've seen, like you said, firsthand. So we would encourage all of you to go help. So that's cooperativeforeducation.org.
Yeah.
You can become either a very cutely named diploma sponsor at $70 a month or an honor roll sponsor at $35 a month. And if you do that, if you sign up for it, let us know.
Yeah.
Because we want to thank you on the air.
Sure.
Cool.
That's a great idea.
So go co-ed.
Go co-ed. Thanks, friends.
So, okay. Chuck, hold on. Let's take a message break, huh?
Yeah, and then listener mail, a really good one this week.
Right.
All right. Stuff you should know.
Hey there, are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals. But you can drink water as clean as nature intended.
Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain, everybody. This rain is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants commonly found in groundwater.
Yep, Richard's Rainwater is naturally pure with no need for harsh chemicals or additives. That means no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing.
And you can enjoy the clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And we even have a special offer, don't we, Josh?
Yeah, text STUFF to 2512928887, and you'll get $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater. Sip the sky. You know, true love is always being excited from the first moment you see one another. And every time after that, it's taking long walks together in the summer or gazing longingly into each other's eyes and watching their tail wag when they chase a squirrel in the yard.
Well, the Pedigree brand asked about believing in love at first sight. And honestly, the answer is yes. As everyone knows from listening to this show, we have pulled all of our dogs off the street that Emily and I have had over the years, either right off the street or through a local shelter and working with them. And they've all become valued family members. And we think they've appreciated it, too.
Yeah, Chuck, there is a Pedigree loyalty survey that found that 90% of first-time dog owners report having a dog improved at least one of their relationships, and 80% of first-time dog owners are overwhelmingly more likely to have made at least one new connection as a result of getting a dog. And 95% of all dog owners say that the bond they have with their dogs is closer than they ever expected. Not a big surprise.
That's true. We all know that adopting a dog can lead to a lifetime meaningful connection, and real love can exist between a pet and a pet parent.
You got that straight.
Pedigree is committed to helping more dogs find loving homes. Opening your home to a dog can help open your heart. And love at first sight is closer than you think because it's available at your local dog shelter.
Yeah, very important point. You can find love at first sight with the Pedigree Adoption Drive from June 7th to June 9th. And the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide.
That's right. So just visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more and see full terms and conditions.
Oh, and now it's time for listener mail, says Jerry.
Yeah, I'm going to call this grief. We got a lot of really great responses on the grief podcast. A lot of people reached out and were like, had just had people pass away in their family and listened to the podcast that week, and it helped them out. And we always like hearing those things. So this is from John. Guys, I'd like to thank you for your grief podcast. It helped me with the grieving process for my best friend and brother, Mike, in his death. He was driving in northern Alberta in mid-December when he lost control of his car after crossing railroad tracks, got hit by an oncoming car, and died on impact. Our family flew there from Vancouver and only had a few hours to spend because of some flight mishaps. We couldn't even bring his ashes back with us. Mailing his ashes was not recommended till the end of the Christmas season, so we are planning on having a funeral for him without ashes. Luckily, the company he was to work for, he was a heavy equipment mechanic and student at the time, they heard of the news, and their head safety guy personally delivered his ashes to our home. We then flew to Manila on Christmas Day and arrived back in Canada on New Year's. I haven't felt the usual symptoms of grief yet, but I'm sure I'll break down and start bawling on the sea bus or something, which would be super awkward. The first month was definitely the hardest. The moment I heard the news has been burnt in my mind, that and a single flower in front of his dorm room from one of the students. The tears really started flowing after I saw that, guys, and I saw life in a completely different way. The little things really do count. Anyway, Mike was most likely listening to podcasts at the time. That's what he does when he buys groceries, and he was on the way to the grocery store. Your voices, in fact, may have been the last he heard. Who knows?
Wow.
There was a frozen pineapple in the crash site, and I know that was his because he loved that stuff. With that said, just in case he's listening to the podcast in another life, could you please do one on pineapples? And that would be for Mike. And John, We will certainly look into pineapples, my friend.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I think we should.
Yeah, hang in there, dude. It's very tough. I can't imagine going through something like that, but I'm glad we could help in some small, tiny way.
Yeah, and thanks for letting us know about that. We appreciate it. Wow. You selected maybe the best one.
Yeah.
And we got some good emails about grief, too.
Yeah, thanks to everyone who sent those in. And, like, people bare their souls sometimes. It's very touching.
Yeah, we hope we make you feel better. If you want to tell us a story about how we made your family feel a little bit better, or you, or whatever, as long as we didn't make you feel worse. Although we should probably hear about that, too.
Sure.
You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@Discovery.com. And you can join us at our website, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
This episode of Stuff You Should Know is brought to you by Audible.com.
Hey, everybody. If you've been looking for love at first sight, it's closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So this June 7th to June 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide. Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more and see full terms and conditions. Are you thirsty? Well, Richard's rainwater is caught clean before it even hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of still rainwater or the cold pressured bubbles of sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And for a coupon, text STUFF to 251-292-8887 and receive $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater.